Boom.
Whoa.
Oh, what have you done?
I don't know.
Hey!
There we go. Hey!
We're on. No, you've got something over my head.
There. We truly do not know how the system works.
Yes. Was it Golnaz was just saying? She liked ours because our this week on Channel 9, that is, because we have no idea what we're doing. And that is true. So I'm Duncan McKenzie.
I'm Clint Arcus. How you doing?
And Dan is in wonderful places on vacation instead of being here. Clint is also on vacation right now, but his fault, he didn't go away. So he actually got called in to do This Week on Channel 9, even though he's on vacation.
I know.
And he still dresses about the same as he normally did every day.
Pretty much.
Awesome.
You guys are lucky I put on pants.
Okay. And I had to check there for a second. We are behind a table. Okay. So, this week.
So, on this week, we have Project to NuGet.
Which, basically, to make a NuGet package very, very quickly out of your project. I haven't actually done this yet. You've made a NuGet package.
I have made a NuGet
But not
package.
Using this.
No. I actually went to the site, made it. I have a cool little NuGet script that I use nowadays that auto-builds, checks, you know, gets stuff in, makes it so then I have a nice little zip file at the end so that I can also upload to CodePlex. It's very targeted at the two or three things that I do on CodePlex.
But right. We use NuGet now on Channel 9. We pull down and Hibernate and a bunch of other stuff through NuGet, which is nice. And then it all gets checked into the shared source. So only one of us really actually have to do it with NuGet, and then
just
it goes to everybody else. But still, this is kind of cool. And so if you're someone like Clint who has to make NuGet packages, this is basically just a little bit easier than the wizard that we already have.
Yeah.
So it is project2nuget.codeplex.com, and it's awesome.
Cool.
Now, another NuGet-related one. This one, I think if you had a popular service, this is kind of crazy.
So, like, for me, I like knowing, the nice thing about knowing how many downloads you have, because then it says, hey, should I continue to invest effort into it?
And yes.
Being able to track it real time, I mean, the person talks, Matt, talks about being OCD, and let's not kid ourselves, if you're a programmer, chances are you're OCD. So, I mean,
not necessarily really OCD, but we use that to describe the fact you're just kind of freaky into details.
Yeah, I like to know how many people are downloading stuff. And
you put it over my head again.
I can't control that.
Okay. Anyways, I still think, I guess if you have a not crazy
like a hat.
If you had a not crazy popular one, this wouldn't be so bad because you would just, you know, you get these nice little updates. But in general, it is if you want almost real time, every 15 minutes, you want really rapid updates from NuGet, what your download numbers are, that kind of stuff, this is kind of a cool way to do it. Now I like this one. So FXCop, which is for going through and checking all your code and, you know, seeing if you meet all sorts of standards. And most of these coding standards are generally good practices, best practices that are agreed upon.
Yep.
Some of them are, you know, a matter of personal preference. But still, it's a nice thing to have across the team.
FXCop, you can tweet that.
You can, definitely. I don't know if you can through this integrator, but I suspect you can. Because everybody has a different set of FXCop's rules they like to run. I think even Visual Studio, you know, out of the box, you make a new Windows Forms project, because I'm old school and I do Windows Forms, breaks against some of these rules, right?
Yeah.
Anyways, it does.
No, I hate when you use Windows Forms, but
But if you're not running Visual Studio Ultimate, then there's no sort of built-in ID integration between FXCop and Visual Studio. This solves that problem.
Yes.
Because FXCop is freely available. So if you have Visual Studio Professional, boom, you could do this. It's not Express, because you can't do add-ins in Express. But in Professional, you can get basically code analysis right in the IDE through this cool project on CodePlex again.
Cool. So how to do, I know I'm going to get nailed for this if I call it localization or internationalization.
Globalization.
Globalization. Let's just go with globalization.
Is localization not a proper word anymore?
It's like I just remember at my prior job, like, there was this giant argument on this.
I-8-N?
Yeah. And I'm like, I don't care. I-8-N. Let's just make it work across multiple languages.
I-8-N. I don't even know what that stands for.
Let's go to the comments to figure that out.
I-8-N. Okay. I can look it up on my phone, but not right now.
So this is all about building a world-ready Windows Phone application, and brings you through the steps to do it. And it, it's not as easy as some people may think, but this helps get you there.
So I know with on websites, the best way we do tons of this stuff is that we tend to run everything through certain formatting paths. So every time we're going to display a date, you run it through an actual format for display or something like that, so that if you want to add in
a new language.
New language, or even maybe to start with, you don't do any localization or globalization, but then you want to go back and do it, then you're set up for it. Does this deal with strings at all, or is this mostly focusing on formatting of numbers and things like that? You don't know, do you?
I can't remember.
Okay.
I'm on vacation.
Yeah, yes. So it was a phone thing, so I kind of left it to him. But I do think, obviously, strings are the other place where you have to do a lot of work to make sure you're properly localized, globalized.
Like, it's not hard work, but it takes some, you have to do it, and you have to remember, like, all the different spots you actually use, like, a string in your UI dates and all that stuff.
Hey, look at that. So this, I don't actually think this is new. The template itself is not new, which is HTML5 starting point. Set the doc type, get those things right in ASP.NET. I think what's sort of changed here is that, once again, now we're on NuGet. So NuGet is coming up a lot.
I think this is actually for web forms versus,
The MVC one.
Yeah.
Oh.
Just reading the second paragraph.
That's
I'm getting punched
point.
In the face. Okay.
That's a good point. I see what you're saying.
Next.
Okay. See, this I actually know all about.
Okay.
So Modernizer is a slightly confusing name. And so the first time you hear about it, it'll be like, hey, make your sites ready for HTML5 with Modernizer. It sounds like it's going to do something to your website. It's going to modernize it. See the use of a verb has made it seem like it's going to do something to your site? But it doesn't do that. It is all for feature detection, which if you ask any web developer, maybe not any web developer, you ask a good web developer, how do I code for all the different standards out there, all the different browsers, they will say feature detection versus, let's say, browser detection, where, is it IE, then I'll do this. Is it, Firefox, I'll do this. A better thing to do is to actually check, like, window.canvas or trying to think of some other things. But anyways, there's tons of Mozilla and Microsoft-specific ones you can check for that way as well and things like that. But depending on what you want to check for, like if you want to check for ActiveX or Silverlight, it can get kind of complicated, and every browser has different ways that you want to check for these things. What the Modernizer script is it gives you a very standard way to basically just check if an HTML5 feature is here, is it available, can I use it? And it's actually used by lots of other libraries. We use jqplot, I believe, in the admin of the site to do graphs and stuff.
Make everything
and
pretty.
It uses Canvas. Unless you don't have Canvas. And it uses, I think, Modernizer at that point to just check this Canvas
do
around.
A polyfill?
Yes.
Is that the term?
Yeah, sorry, well, yes, but it does it on Canvas.
Well, no, doesn't Modernizer have the polyfill thing? I was reading it.
Yes. So I don't think it's using, it doesn't use Modernizer to do the drawing at all. It's just using it to check, should I do it the Canvas way? Or then it actually loads in a shim that basically gives you Canvas-like support older browsers. But anyways, the point being is if you need to check for an HTML5 feature, which will actually come up in a little bit in another one of these things, Modernizer is a nice standard way to do that.
Speaking of.
Yes. So the WC3 conference, or W3Conf, was recently held, and is this the first W3C conference?
I believe so. I know Microsoft helped sponsor.
We were involved.
We were
involved. And it was held somewhere close. All of the videos are up online, not on Channel 9, because it's not a Channel 9 presentation, but they're all up online. And it's great. I mean, it's all about HTML5. It's kind of the big thing now. But in general, you get kind of a peek at things from a standards committee point of view, which I think is different. So you have people there from Mozilla, you have people there from Google, you have people from Microsoft, and all sorts of different presentations. This is not your standard build or mix or PDC. This is very much on web standards. So cool thing if you're into such things. Oh, actually, this is cool because signal R is also involved.
Is that
involved
the proper way to pronounce it? This is the problem with all these crazy
signal,
you know,
signal R.
Yeah.
Versus
I for some odd reason I see the L and R, so I always think it's
signal
IR.
Oh, signal R because it's doing polling. Anyways, that's actually not the real focus of this particular one. So. If you ever used, I think one of the best examples would be like the Facebook chat.
Yeah.
You have essentially what we would do before with things like, well, things like sockets and stuff like that. That is, you know, real-time communication. But you want to do it on a website because everyone does everything on websites now. We don't use these applications anymore. And this is just a great example. It actually shows off a bunch of stuff. But what I thought was really cool is the idea that it's doing sort of the classic collaborative editing of a document over the web, and then using SignalR, which we'll talk about more on the next news item, to communicate back and forth so that it will update in real time. Actually, setting up this presentation, we were doing sort of online editing of a PowerPoint app where we were both editing it, and it was telling us, like, you know,
through SkyDrive,
Clint Ruckus is now editing this document, like midway while I'm editing it. That's sort of the classic kind of example.
Yeah, and then what was best of all is both of us were like, whoa, hands off.
Yeah, because I don't trust collaborative editing of things. So once I saw someone else was in there, I backed out. But this is intended for you to be integrating, you know, both doing sort of a checklist app. It'd be a great shopping list app for you and whoever you live with to make lists. Okay.
Next.
Same topic. So this is very, very focused on what SignalR is. And when I first read this, I immediately dismissed it because he starts talking about HTML5 WebSockets.
Yeah.
And most people don't have HTML5? No, most do. I don't know what the percentage is now.
I think it's getting there more and more and more.
But still, it's not all.
No.
And it's not even a big enough percentage that you can just sort of
assume
that you have it. So as a web developer, I often, if things are not ubiquitous.
Like, what's your threshold?
I think it's when you're getting up into, like, the 90% and stuff, where you can just start
Ooh.
To assume.
Okay, that's really
high. Of your audience, not the world. Of your audience,
okay?
Right? So, actually, it wasn't that long ago. It's probably a year now, where we hit that threshold for browsers on Channel 9, where we really only were getting modern browsers. Those terms. So we were getting, you know, Firefox 4 and up. We were getting Safari. I can't remember.
Okay.
A very, very recent Safari. We were getting, you know, 10 and up in Chrome, and i.e. like 8 and 9. And once we hit that, we had our web developers, and we actually made the call that I don't care about IE6 anymore. And I said that. And then in meetings, when asked for individual features, I'll backtrack a bit. I like it if anyone on any browser can consume the site. But in terms of, well, this advanced feature or it looks kind of wrong in IE6, I don't want to spend time fixing that. But that's not what this article was saying. He's talking about WebSockets and saying how awesome they are, and they would let you do things like Facebook chat, and isn't that great? Or the To-Do app that we just saw in the previous news item. But since you can't depend on WebSockets being available, there is a library called SignalR that will switch over to polling if it needs to, if it doesn't have WebSockets. And to me, that's awesome.
Yeah, and what's cool also is there's a server, and then there's also a .NET client app.
Right.
It's
across
sweet.
The board,
it's
and
across
yet,
the board.
You know, moves forward to the modern features if they're available.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. I have actually no intention of using it at the moment because I don't have a feature. But if you did want to do something that is... they actually give an example. Updating the GPS location of vehicles on a map. If we did that recently, maybe. We didn't do it this way. We polled. This would have been cool.
Yeah. Had I actually been above the water line. Next. Developer's Guide to Expression Web.
Yes. Expression Web. It's a web design tool. Kind of reminds me of Dreamweaver a bit. It's basically, we don't have front page anymore. We have Expression Web, and it's the new hotness. It's actually really good at not messing with your markup. But I actually almost never use it, unless I'm doing pure HTML.
Yeah, I mean, it has some very nice features like Super Preview.
Yes.
For those who don't know what Super Preview is, it allows you to compare basically in the design tool what it would look like statically against multiple different browsers, which is nice.
Yeah,
nice.
We could reduce the number of monitors Joff on our team has if he used this more.
Like, people say I have a lot of gear.
Has he up to six monitors?
He, quite literally, it is going like this across him.
Yeah, but they're all different machines. They're not all hooked to one. They're all different machines running different browsers. Now, this is static, so you still need... You need something, whether it's a VM or something, which would be a great idea, VHD, something like that. But anyways, Expression Web, it's a good web design product. I actually just don't do much web design myself.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time I've actually had time to do web dev.
No. But I have installed, and anytime I do want to do HTML, I use it. And I probably don't take advantage of anywhere near these top five features. But they are listed there to check out.
Yes. So, up next, Lua integration into WPF.
Lua is the coding language, primarily it's the coding language behind Warcraft, World of Warcraft.
It's a lightweight scripting language.
That you would use for macros and stuff in Warcraft.
Yeah, to get stuff to work and blah, blah, blah. It's a full-blown tutorial, goes through it. It's good, it comes up, you know, looking at seven examples.
It's nice.
So, you know, it should be enough to get you there.
Yeah, and actually, adding a scripting language is one of the cool ways to build community around a game, and to make people excited. I like the games they actually showed in that one. Rock, Paper, Azure. So this is a contest game. It's a contest, isn't it?
Yeah, I believe so.
It's a contest. Basically intended to teach you about Azure while building. You build your own player. Kind of like those tank games where you build a brain for your tank. But it's focused around Azure. And it's I know Brian Hitney is involved. I don't actually know the other guys' names. Brian's a cool programmer dude in the East Coast who has built many cool demos. But it's still going. And you can do it. And especially if you're trying to learn Azure, it's a great way to do it. You know, even just with your sort of default starter account, you can go ahead and build your own player.
Next, learning the cloud on your own terms. So this is a nice little overview on, I wouldn't really say pure developer, but it's more of a, okay, I warned you guys, or no I didn't actually, yeah, my computer's about ready to die. So it's a quick overview on like, you know, learning terms like hybrid, public cloud, blah, 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 et cetera, and because we now actually have to move fast,
Jumping ahead.
Building your first Metro-style app using C#, C++, or Visual Basic. And you could also use JavaScript.
Yes. Though this isn't covering that. This is building it using the more full-featured languages.
Yes.
And it's a tutorial. And if you're getting into Metro stuff, it's an awesome way to do it. How do I go next? Aha!
Flashback, Ask the Goo.
So this was part of Channel 9 Live. Yes?
At Build.
And any of the Q&As with Scott Guthrie are always good. This was, I believe this would be probably on the second day.
Yes, I would
the
assume second
day.
Second day.
And,
it's in day one.
Of Channel 9. Well, anyways. So
September 14th.
the questions go all over the place because people want to ask
Guthrie
him about
covers so
NBC.
Much
they want to ask him about Azure. They want to ask him even about Windows 8 because he's a person who knows things. So it's interesting. And it's got, you know, Charles guiding it because, you know, he's our guy.
Yep. Next.
Unit testing for SQL Server. It's cool. We unit test all sorts of stuff, and we don't unit test anything in SQL Server. And honestly, and I did read through this and everything, I don't think it applies to us because we don't use any stored procedures. Mm. So
like where I used to work, yeah, man, this... They did a lot.
There's
of
a lot of code
there.
Sometimes in your SQL Server stored procs, and if you can't test those,
then
you're not really your unit tests or your code coverage is very small at that point. So this is a great idea. I've never seen a place that had unit testing for stored procedures before. Now this, every year starting in 2009, 2008, Hanselman has been listing out his sort of power user tool list, and it's awesome. I went through, I found, you know, maybe five or six that I'm going to install and start using right away.
He had some new ones on for desktop stuff.
Yeah,
he's
cool. Actually highlighted which ones are new, but he's kept some of the old ones because they're not bad, just because they're last year's. And I also found I'm using probably 25% of them already. So it's a great list. And we're talking things like, screen real estate management tools, coding tools, Notepad++.
Yeah, it's just a ton of cool things.
Massively long. And there's a Japanese translation, if you're interested.
Okay, next.
You skipped yours.
Okay, so picks of the week. So this is a series. I mean, I know everyone who probably watches Channel 9, this doesn't actually target them, but it could target, like, their children or someone they know.
Right. It could target some people. Not everyone's a C-sharp developer already or a VB developer.
So this is... So a while back, we launched the Windows Phone 7 for absolute beginners. And then we realized, hey, oh, crap, if we ever launch a new series, we have all this content we have to recover. Mm. So we took a step back and said, okay, let's cover fundamentals. So it's, you know, what's an if statement? What's a switch statement? What's a loop?
Yep.
What's a class? And then moving forward, if we don't have to cover that stuff anymore, if you want to know what a switch statement is, go watch this.
Yes, and it's a great thing to reference individual parts of it.
Yeah, everything's
for somebody who needs to, maybe just a little refresher, or if they're coming from a different language.
Yeah.
And they want to know control statements in C# or VB, there is a video all about it. A quick refresher for them. Maybe they're already a Java programmer, so they're good to go. They just need, syntax kind of stuff. Things. So the thing's great. It's Bob Tabor again.
Yes, right. Bob.
He did the
Tabor
Windows
from,
Phone?
Yes, from LearnVisualStudio.net. Yep. Great,
famous
great guy.
Site.
They're designed to go step by step by step.
Yep.
And then we'll have more coming in the future.
All encoded and uploaded by our very own Golnaz.
Golnaz, yes.
Well done.
So then I didn't have to do it?
Yes.
Next.
Aha! So this is, there'll be a link down below. Basically, if you need to build architecture diagrams, and I like architecture diagrams, this is a whole set of icons and scalable images.
Do you love architecture diagrams that much?
That much. I do. Did I do that before you flipped it over? So almost every day I end up drawing the architecture of something to do with Channel 9 or our video encoding or something on my whiteboard. So it goes to show that people like things to be drawn out for them. And what this allows is if I wanted to do in a blog post or just a web page or in a document, if I want to detail how something works, then you need good pictures for it. Or else you're going to make everything look like that standard Visio database icon. Now these aren't Visio stencils, but they're almost better. Because they're basically EMF files, enhanced meta, they're basically vector. They're vector, and you can bring them into Visio or whatever it is you want to use and construct the diagram the way you want, and you're awesome and set. And they're very up-to-date. They have things even like Windows Azure Traffic Manager as iconography in there, so they're very
Sweet.
Detailed. Awesome.
I love them. Thank you.
We're done.